and welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't pitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
And welcome to another episode of The Municipals. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Philip.
Oh, Philip, it's been a, since the last time we sat down to record, lots happened. We had a city council meeting. I didn't take notes, spoiler alert. However, we are going to play the 5-minute clip of Olivia Chow talking about the executive committee meeting. And then I have some comments on that. And we have some other stuff, and we have an interview today. Well, it was previously recorded, but with a gentleman named Brent Haynes. And so I hope you guys enjoy it. And we're just going to talk about politics,
which we love to do. If I realize that we've sort of jumped ship a lot, from our municipals position to sometimes provincial pals, sometimes federal pals. Man, if we were a very dedicated provincial pals and we were talking about other provinces, I don't want to get too deep into a lot of this, but it'd be so easy for us to talk about the situation going on in BC with their sort of reversal on drug criminalization, Alberta with the municipal parties. And if we wanted to go positive, we could talk about their rail. Saskatchewan, I've been following this this YouTuber named Steve Boots. I've been enjoying his content, and he's been talking about some of the shenanigans going on in the Saskatchewan legislature. There's a lot that we could talk about if we were focused on the provinces. We're not. Well, we're not going to do that.
Actually, let's do that real quick, because there is something I wanted to ask you about. So, specifically in Alberta, with them being able to replace city councillors, is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
That's April Fool's thing.
No, that is a part of the municipal parties thing that the Alberta government is enacting.
Now, that's the stupidest thing I've ever fucking heard.
It's stupid. It's anti-democratic. It's insane that anyone... And, oh, by the way, it's a pilot that will only affect 2 cities in Alberta. Now, Matthew, you and I understand that Alberta is a very conservative province. And that's not a controversial statement. That is the reality. I think they would say that about themselves as well. And I'm not using conservative as a pejorative here. I'm describing what I imagine they would agree. I think they would agree with me.
Fuck those people.
No, I'm not. I'm actually, for once. Well, we'll get there. This pilot is focused on Calgary and Edmonton. And I mean, it's easy for them to spin it and just say, well, obviously, yeah, they're the 2 biggest cities in the province, but they're also very decidedly not conservative run. In fact, that's sort of the big push for municipal parties in Alberta. I don't know if you feel the same way as I do. And when I say this, I understand what the immediate pushback will be from the Alberta government, because I'm going to say this and I'm effectively going to be insulting the electorate. And the Alberta government can say, actually, we believe the electorate is smarter than that. And I would counter that with, are they, though? Which is, so I know one of the big things that motivated them to push municipal parties in the province is Mayor Gondek, who Alberta, or sorry, the mayor of all of Alberta. How big do you think Alberta is, Philip? No, I know. Mayor of Calgary. And apparently, again, I think I talked about this briefly when I brought up a guy named Wyatt Claypool, where he presented Olivia Chow's running for mayor as a tax-lowering run, which, and she was the candidate who said out loud, I am ready to tax. So, I mean, he's full of shit. So I can't trust what his position is on Mayor Gondek based on the fact that he so easily lied about what Mayor Chow's position is. But regardless, The big issue here is there's a concerted effort. I want to say from non-progressives, not necessarily, I don't even know if progressives like Mayor Gondek, so, to be honest.
Here's my question about it.
Yes.
Just let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Sorry, yeah, you're right. I'm
let's
all
say
over
for
the
example,
place.
Let's say for example, Counselor A votes a way that the mayor or maybe the Alberta government doesn't like. Does that mean they can say, "Hey, Mr. Counselor A, you're fired"?
Yes.
That's complete horseshit.
It's insane. I believe the reason they're doing that is because the widely publicized attempt to recall Mayor Gondek is going to fall through. Like, she's not going to get recalled. So now the Alberta government needs a second plan. Now,
it sounds to me like this mayor is no Mayor Nenshi.
No. I mean, again, I don't know enough about her to say good or bad. I'm more just commenting on the Alberta government's decision to do this. So here's my bit. Here's what my view is on the desire from the Alberta government to make municipal parties a thing. I think they just want people to vote conservative. And that is, if there are signs from... One of the things they're saying is that these municipal politicians are lying about what they want to do to get elected, which...
Everybody does that.
That doesn't...
Am I wrong?
I was about to deny...
Am I wrong?
No, you're correct. I was about to deny it, but what I really want to say is not any more than anyone else. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So I'm not encouraging that, but it's like... It really does feel like it's you do what the Alberta government wants you to do, or else you're gone. And why would anyone run who wasn't already a sycophant for the Alberta government? Anyways?
I mean, at this point, why don't the Alberta government just legislate? You must vote conservative.
Why? Yeah, essentially, why not? Why not?
Fuck
sorry,
all
and that's
people.
And that's my bit where I think the Alberta government would say to me, actually, we have more hope. And more, we believe our constituents are smarter than that. And I would say, I don't believe they are. There are places, for example, no, here's the thing. This sounds like I'm going to make it an entirely conservative thing. It's not. There are a lot of wards and boundaries and districts in this country that have been with a single party for, like, historically a very long time. And a lot of people will vote. The example I want to use is Spadina Fort York in 2021, where Kevin Vuong was elected. And, you know, I don't really consider that an honest election because he was kicked off the ballot from the Liberal Party before the election was over, but it was too late for them to change the ballot. So that happens. He becomes elected because it's a constituency that votes Liberal blindly. That's stupid. But we know these places, and I'm including, there's a reason why people don't campaign federally in Alberta, because those votes are accounted for, which is, it's their fault. I mean, they vote consistently conservative, regardless if they get anything or not from the federal government. Of course, they're going to ignore you.
You know, this whole lesson that you're giving me, it just reinforces that if shit don't work here and I have to go somewhere else, that Alberta should be like on the bottom of the list.
that is sort of how I feel. You know, I couldn't imagine having kind of like the political ideas and thoughts that I have, going to Alberta and feeling so powerless to change anything.
Well, thank you for that little lesson there.
I want to quickly cap it off by saying I don't think I quite got across my point I wanted to in a very good way, but hey, what can I say? It's the podcast.
Let's move along. I want to talk about a tweet that I found like on or about April 27th. It's from our boy Nick Cavallis. You know, the failed chief of staff of Anna Bailao. He was supposed to get her into the mayor's chair. How'd that work out? Anyway, he says...
No, while I agree with your point, Matthew, we can't really say second place is a bat. Like, I don't want to diminish your point because I agree with you. But second
true,
place, I mean,
true.
I guess this isn't horseshoes, you know, it's...
I'll just say that I like Anna Bailao a lot more than I like Nick Cavallis. How about that?
That's fair.
Anyway, he writes, situation for Trudeau is really bad. He will call a leadership race this summer. You heard it here first. I doubt he'll even stay on as PM while the LPC finds their next drama candidate. Your thoughts?
You know, this is actually, it's a good question because I honestly don't think too hard about it. And now that's my fault because, again, this is me jumping to, I get so annoyed by the commentary in this case, which is a lot of people saying, oh, Justin Trudeau is so narcissistic that he's going to take the party to the election and lose. And then I hear from other people who say Justin Trudeau is so narcissistic that he's going to leave so that he doesn't have to face Poilievre and lose. Like when the commentary
becomes
we've been banging this drum.
We've been banging this drum for.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know how long.
Oh, since February, the walk in the snow.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry
yeah.
to interrupt you. Continue.
No. I gotcha. So the thing is, I honestly feel as if there's no personal winning for Trudeau, no matter what he chooses. In my mind, it feels like the Liberals would fare better with a new leader if the election was 2 years away. I feel like we're too close to a proper election, even, you know, the extended... the maximum they can go, which is what, mid-October 25?
I think so,
something
yeah.
Something like that. It feels like it's not enough time to go through a leadership contest and have this new leader sort of pick up the Liberal banner. And I mean, they would be the new prime minister, right? Like if
correct,
you know, they do the leadership. Yeah.
We'd have a Kim Campbell situation.
Oh, that's fun. Oh no. Oh no. You guys, you can't give it to Christopher
Freeland or a Paul
just
Martin
to lose.
Or a Paul Martin situation.
Oh my god, I forgot it. Well, listen, we can't let Christopher Freeland become the prime minister just for 6 months.
For that matter,
I say that
Mark Carney
both,
either.
Both, well, here's what's fun about the whole Mark Carney situation, okay? Why are the Conservatives going so hard against a private citizen?
From what I've gathered, it's his deep ties to the World Economic Forum.
Hmm.
I would be scared of anyone
I'm not concerned about any of that.
With deep ties to them. I don't like them. I don't think that's a big secret though.
No.
You know that I don't like the World Economic Forum, regardless of what political stripe they follow. I don't like people coming and telling us what to do. We live in a democratic society. We have leaders for that. I don't understand why the leaders. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that thought, but. Yeah, I just do not, and I don't like Klaus Schwab.
Oh, that
is he still alive? I'm sorry.
I think so. Is he still alive?
The last I heard, he was in the hospital.
No, I remember, but I don't pay attention to that. Like I know the name and like all that stuff, but like, hey, Klaus Schwab, you do you. You know, you be in the hospital, you get out of the hospital, you die, you live. You do what you need to do.
All right, so now we're gonna play that clip from Olivia Chow, and then
we'll
have
before we do that
after that.
What about do you? I didn't quite get to finish my thought. Well, actually,
I apologize.
No,
finish
no.
your
You know
thought.
what? You know what? I'm going to say I did finish my thought because it's I can't decide if I think he's going to leave or not. I think either situation isn't that crazy. What do you think he's going to do?
To be honest with you, I think he's not gonna leave. If you had asked me before February, because of how the whole history lined up, I would have bet my house and everything I owned that he was taking that walk in the snow on February 29th. Now, I think he's gonna suffer the same fate as Kathleen Wynne. You would have
I think
thought
that's a
Kathleen Wynne was smart enough to go, okay. New leader, new premier to fight Doug Ford. Nope. She had to, and the fucked up part is that her party was decimated, but she won her own seat still.
I know, that's so
What the
funny.
fuck is that? So even if Trudeau wins his own seat,
Which I do expect he will.
his party's gonna get decimated.
And could you like? And here's the thing. Actually, I like that you brought that up because here's what I think would be so. I mean, it's the reality of Canadian Parliament, right? Imagine 2025. He loses the election to Pierre Poilievre, and then he has to sit in opposition. That's gotta fucking suck. Like at that point, I'd just be like, I'm out. I'll just call a stupid by-election for Papineau. I don't care. I'm out.
Oh, that's what happened to Kathleen Wynne. She won and she had to sit, and they didn't have official party status.
Yeah. Did she not run again in 22? Is she not
I
an
think,
MPP anymore?
no, she's not an MPP anymore. I think she resigned shortly after. I'm not exactly sure because I don't follow her because I don't care. Being completely honest.
No, I got you. I hear you.
But anyway, let's go to that clip from Olivia Chow. And let me just see if I remember how to do this. Okay, here we go.
A number of important issues, including investing in communities, advancing the new Somalia Center for Culture and Recreation, and investing on student nutrition program, which is my first key item today. I have, in my not quite a year time as a mayor, I worked with city
Yeah, I see how
staff
it's
and
playing, but
all of you, my colleagues,
it doesn't.
and we
The
have
audio
secured
is not
funding
playing.
from both the
You
provincial
can't
and
hear
the
it?
federal government.
Ooh, one second.
We
I
all
can
know about
request
the
remote
provincial
control.
New
Does that mean you can
Deal.
control your computer?
And that is where we secure 630
You
million
shouldn't
for
let me, but.
transit and 600 million for
What
shelters, along
are
with
you doing? You can't
758
hear it?
million for new
No.
subway
Well, no, I
cars
can't. To be
on
fair, I
Line
can't
2,
hear it. Actually,
and
if you gave
nearly
me
2
control, would I be
million
able to
with the
hear you?
upload of the Guard
I don't
app.
know. Let's try it.
I
Yeah, I'm gonna
want
request control
to
again.
give you a quick report because it connects with all the work we've been doing on housing,
Can
and
you
there are
hear it
many
now?
items on housing in this agenda.
Yeah, pardon?
the refugee sheltering, as you're remembering,
You know what?
sheltering, where
I imagine we're
Deputy
gonna
Mayor
edit,
Jennifer
you know,
McCauley have done
this messy
tremendous
part
amount
out.
of work on, and all of you.
Can we? I think
For
so.
2023, we received 200
I was gonna
million
say
in
if you wanted to send
covering
me
out
the link and I can
costs of
watch it
200
along as we
in
have it playing so I can hear what you're
2024,
saying.
which is about a down payment of 40
I'm gonna
million.
give up remote control.
Yesterday's budget, the
Copy.
federal government
Break the
has
day. Hold on.
committed
Go
a
back to you.
1.1 billion of Canada-wide a program which will give us
How do I fucking
enough funding
Oh,
for sheltering
there we
refugees.
go.
We also leveraged 6.7 million in
There
municipal
we go.
contribution to the
Cool. All right.
Canada-Ontario housing benefit.
So you are
Last
at
year,
the,
you
what is
may
it,
recall
35
that
minute
there is the Housing Accelerator Funds. Our team have convinced through our advocacy that the national government needs to partner with us on their MIRA program, which is the multi-residential units acquisition funds. We now have a national 1.5 billion housing acquisition fund, which is the model that you have created, my colleagues. So it's worthy of celebration. We have also pushed for construction financing for new apartment buildings and to have funding to make them affordable.
Okay, hear it?
Now I'm watching.
With yesterday's federal budget, there are a lot more funding on the table, and that would result in thousands and thousands of dollars with a lot more affordable homes. That the loan guarantee will itself unlock enough funding to build about 30,000 of homes for about 30,000 people in Toronto. So I have a list here that we will continue to work to secure our share of $6 billion of the Canada Housing Infrastructure Fund.
Pause it. So, yes, so the homeless problem's over then.
Well, Matthew, you know that they're not going to give them to people. They're going to be market housing, which means homeless people aren't getting these houses. Investors
so what are we doing? So what are we doing? They're going to Airbnb. What are we doing? What is it going to take for people to create apartment buildings? Create? I don't give a fuck at this point. To help homeless people get off the street and start their life over again. Obviously, they weren't born on the street. Something happened, whatever. Now they're homeless. They've been homeless. There are homeless people that have been homeless within the last year, definitely since the pandemic. But there are homeless people going back 10, 12, 15 years. When is Toronto going to stand up and do something about it? Or are we just going to be catering to the refugees, which no offense to them, they deserve housing too. They come here. They deserve the same opportunities that we get. But the problem is that the Toronto homeless is getting left out in the cold. And I'm getting really pissed off every single time. She was supposed to be different. She's supposed to be progressive. And I haven't seen it. I haven't heard it. And I'm wondering when and if it'll ever show up. Your thoughts? I'm done with this now. We can turn this shit off.
Well,
your thoughts. Take it away.
Sorry. I had another YouTube video playing in the background, and I thought it was like from you. So I was very confused about what was happening. So I had sent it to you in the chat while we were watching that clip. This isn't a pro or anti Olivia Chow thing. The 1.1 billion nationally, I believe is the fund she's talking about, and I think Toronto's getting 400 million of that, which seems insane to me. That's like, I mean, Toronto.
Yeah, but she specifically quoted for Toronto that's going to equate to somewhere around 30,000 units. I don't think she said home. She said units.
Did she? You know what? I was talking to a friend earlier today, and it really does make me think. That we should be doing, I say we, you and I, as unelected people, but we should be talking to, I want to talk to Chloe Brown about like land trusts and co-ops and stuff, because I feel like that's her jam right now. And God, if we could get just a people-powered movement of getting more co-ops built in the city, I think that'd be so great.
I couldn't agree more with you. Special considerations should be given to people that are in need, and nobody is in more need than homeless people. I can connect the dots. Why the fuck can't someone who's sitting in the mayor's chair connect the dots? We're not connecting the same dots. We're not on the same page. And this
we don't want to connect those dots.
Unfortunately, Philip, I apologize. She is the one in the chair. When John Tory was in the chair, we gave it to him. You specifically, but I followed.
Yeah.
I am still going to hold her feet to the fire because I don't see it. The progressive mayor that you all wanted. I'm not speaking for you. I'm speaking for the progressive people that they all wanted in the chair. Well, she's in the fucking chair. What the fuck is she doing?
Don't blame me. I voted for Gru. I did. I mean, I did. I laughed.
That's a t-shirt. That's a t-shirt. Don't blame me. I voted for Gru.
You know, his partner lives just down the street. I really should It's a whole thing. Anyways, there was a period of time internally in my head. I'm not giving like real dates. It was more like a vibe where I thought to myself, it's too soon to criticize her because she's brand new on the job and she still needs to land on her feet and, you know, get the stuff moving. I think that time has expired. I think she's been in the mayor long enough that we can either praise her policies or criticize.
I'm tired of listening to her say, I inherited this. We know you inherited a mess. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. Now, I can appreciate, for example, the very, I want to say, the low-hanging fruit of opening up the washrooms. John Tory couldn't seem to figure out anything to do with parks.
Well, he didn't know where the keys were put. Cleaning,
didn't know where the keys were. Didn't see a problem with the overflowing garbage bins. Like, there was a lot of visual shit that John Tory just utterly did not give a fuck about. And Olivia Chow, to her credit, at least from my perspective, is doing a lot more of those visual getting stuff done. But I don't, as you said, I agree with you.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Quick story. My son is on a Simpsons binge watching lately, and he's roped me into it. So would you say that John Tory is Mr. Burns, or would you say he's more Homer?
No, I think, listen, the problem here is I forgot his name, but John Tory and the mayor of Springfield, think are quite good analogies of each other. Oh, Mayor Quimby. Okay, Mayor Quimby, I got it. Yes. I'm good. Yeah. 100%. It's, you know, the trips that are more personal than business, even though, you know, they claim they're for business. I'm thinking of Mayor Quimby in his vacation office, or the ceremonial drums when he was out of the office, or I don't know, whatever. It was funny. No, John Tory is Mayor Quimby.
Okay. So your political grandfather got involved, and there's a series of tweets I'm going to read, and then you can agree or you can deny whatever you like in the time we have left. So the first one says, start building, no excuses. Hundreds utilized schools that need students. Do 6 to 12 floors on top of the schools, as well as of community centers, libraries. Now, allow as of right 6 to 12 floors on all arterials, permits in 60 days and not 3 years. Main issue, lack of doers at top. No change.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And then he goes on to say, renovations, allow all to divide houses into four units. If 10% do, 40,000 times four is 160,000. New 120,000 units. Even 5% would be 60,000. Fast. Benefits, owner, comma, rent, small contractors doing thousands, renters, options everywhere, need one stop shop at City Hall with solutions, money, legal, permit 30 days. Oh, Gil, man, your grammar's killing me.
I know how how Gil writes his tweets, so I get why you're struggling. And then
the last one is, biggest problem at City Hall is lack of doers. Most 20 top staff rewarded for not doing 13 plus years, change half. Chief planner and parks vacant. Also change transport, TTC, two deputy city managers, etc. Nice people, knowledge, but not doers. I disagree because the two fucking deputy city managers don't know shit during question period. And then he finishes off, great city staff frustrated with those bosses. Your thoughts?
First of all correct. In my perspective, Gil has all the right ideas going there. And I also think it's very important that I think it's more effective criticism from Gil. Gil specifically criticizing Olivia Chow is more impactful criticism because he stumped for her. He didn't run for mayor so that she could run and win. I believe we had this conversation. Yeah, I don't think we have a mayor Chow if Gil Penalosa is running.
Exactly. We have a mayor bylaw. And then we have a chief of staff Cavallis. Anyway,
yeah, that's right. And so when you can have someone who we understand supported, I don't actually assume that this means he's cut off all support for her. I think this is just proper criticism, and he's right. And we need to be able to criticize even the people that we support and the people that we push for. So I'm beyond Gil's points that I agree with. I'm happy that he's vocalizing his criticism.
Who do you think he's doing everything but singling out Chow? He said at the top, no doers. Anyway, that's what's going on at City Hall. And real quick, now that we have the time, I came across a Instagram post from my guy, my boy, Giorgio Mammoliti.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I'm going to quickly get Mammoliti this in before the time expires. He writes, today was a good day in court. First, for all of you that don't know that about this, the town of Wasega Beach charged me for putting up 300 signs on town property, which are the boulevards, after last election, nearing a couple of years ago now. I was the only election candidate to be charged with this. I will let you all think for yourselves as to why they did this. Today, the courts agreed to suspend the charge after I agreed that a volunteer put up two signs without knowing, not 300. This is not the first time Wasega Town Hall has taken me to court and lost. This will be their third time charging me and losing in court with me. Again, the town of Wasega Beach has been sloppy with taxpayer dollars. 2 years of going back and forth to court. Maybe this plays a bigger part of an agenda on their part toward me in trying to intimidate me. Again, I will let you judge. We have a homeless problem. We have our taxes increasing incredible. Our youth have no jobs and our beaches are filthy. And I still believe corruption in this town is rampant. Maybe they should spend more time taking care of real issues and stop coming after me. And my fight is not over with them either. They have decided to do an audit of my election books in the same election. I will remind all that I lost in the last municipal election, but they still feel like they need to come after me. I guess the truth hurts. I won't be intimidated by anyone and will always fight and defend myself and the taxpayers. Giorgio, your thoughts, quickly.
Well, I want you to know that it was just very funny how you presented that. As I interrupt you to say, yeah, what's going on with my boy Mammoliti? And then you start, it's a good day in court. You know, it's so interesting that and this is a bit of my Toronto as the center of the universe rudeness coming for me. That it's like as a child I lived in Collingwood, right? And I went to school in Wasega Beach. And it's so funny to me because I never really thought of Wasega Beach. It is. It's a municipality, don't get me wrong. I'm not so naive to say that it's not. But I never really saw it as one. Like, there's a specific road that I would go on the bus to go to school. And it's like, that's my image of Wasega Beach. So it's so weird for me to imagine there actually being a town council. There is. Again, I'm being weird here, just so everyone understands. I'm being weird here. But I get the sense that this is a bit of a case of Mammaliti not being completely honest, only in the sense that this is the third time that the Wasega Beach Council has tried to go after you. And so you mentioned, of course, this the sign kind of blitz and whatever. What were the other two times for, bud?
I have
Because
no
that seems
idea.
really weird. And as an aside, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. If you didn't properly submit your financials, like, they'll audit you. That same for
Absolutely.
me when I ran for city council. Now again, my form was I had a single donation and a single payment. It wasn't a very good situation, but I came in last place and I still had to submit financials. You know, you're not above it just because you don't win.
For anyone that is seeking more information, I did an interview during the 2022 municipal election with Giorgio Mammaliti. Go back this time in history. Maybe we'll post it here as a bonus episode, and we'll see what happens. But for now, we are going to take a break, and we will see you guys on the other side.
And we're back, and guys, for this episode. For this interview, unfortunately, Phil is not feeling well, so he won't be part of this interview. But I am joined by Mr. Brent Haynes. I'm sorry.
Not too sure.
Sometimes we mess up names here. I apologize. We've been in what my audience doesn't know is we've been in contact on Twitter. You telling me about a project that you're working on. And now here's the time where you get to tell the audience. So you can go ahead and introduce yourself and then the project. And when I have questions, I'll just interrupt you.
Perfect. Love it. Thank you, Matthew, for having me on. So this is a passion project of mine that I've been working on for just over a year now, just outside of work, just on weekends, evenings. And it's a master plan along Lakeshore Boulevard, Toronto's West End. So about me, I'm a designer, trained in architecture. I've worked on multiple master plans in the past for work, but now I just saw an opportunity for a site that could be much more than what it is today, and thought that I should do something about it, not just, tell everyone, oh, this is bad city plan, or this is underutilized land. We should, build crazy towers and do something in this land, but I actually wanted to show people what this piece of land could and maybe, really would be a great space and community if we were to do something about it. So this is what I'm talking about is Lakeshore Boulevard West. This is in between Ellis Avenue and Roncesvalles pedestrian bridge. So that's about 1.4 kilometers along the lakeshore, and it's just a large road right now with medians in between, unused land between the road and the highway, the Gardiner, and it's about 100 meters wide. So that's calculating from the sidewalk that is in between the lake and the road. So you have the road, you have the sidewalk, and you have the entire park facing onto Lake Ontario. And then everything north of that is 100 meters wide just for these two roads are going east way eastbound and westbound. And 100 meters for literally just a road is absolutely absurd. We're talking about, the Gardiner itself is a fraction of that, and that's just north of the site. And north of that is the railroad passing, and north of that is the Queensway. So we have just this like insane infrastructure going through this this entire way, and it's one piece of land that's just really just nothingness right now. So this whole master plan is came about for me living in the neighborhood, driving it all the time, walking all the time, and it's a great place. There's a boardwalk, there's a Martin Goodman trail, great for biking, picnicking. So there's a lot of awesome stuff happening at the park. It's just there's just all this unutilized land that to get to the park, you're crossing this really large intersection, And all this other land is just not working for anyone at this time. So walking there, driving there, I just kind of envisioned like let me actually print this out. So what I've done is I printed out to scale this entire site and started playing and pushing and pulling roads. Like, what if we were to just pull Lakeshore Boulevard and not have this median, put it next to the highway? How much land do we have left? How can we utilize that land to add some intensification for housing, community space, start bleeding in the existing park space into this master plan? And how would we start massing this to be a community that's really good for Toronto, that brings a lot of new homes and a lot of new residents to the city without compromising on existing communities or infrastructure that would have to get rid of to make this happen? Like, how can we do this in a responsible and great way? And so that's where the idea really initiated and started. So really from there, I started being a designer and studying architecture. I have all the programs and ability to start looking at how much space each condo needs based on you have corridors within your condos, you have your elevator shaft, and you have a lot of different staircases that you gotta make this all work by code. So you have general sizes that you can know that you can build a condo with. So I start plopping those in and start realizing, okay, actually we have space for this. So then it became about how can we make the ground space a really great active space for pedestrians. So what happened then is I had to figure out how could we actually make this community work in terms of you can't just throw on some condos or throw on some community center and say, look at this great master plan. Could we actually take this a step further? Could I actually make this into a community that maybe Torontonians would absolutely love and actually function? So what started is I looked at the roads that if we were to access this site from Lakeshore Boulevard today, we take the existing intersections. So we have Colborne Lodge and we have Parkside Drive. And so those could be just the entrance points into the site. From there, those cars can do the parking, the loading, the deliveries, everything that's needed to actually make buildings function and all the retail that would happen at the ground level. And what that meant is that the entire ground level on and along the park that exists today, bleeding into the site, can be completely pedestrian. So this whole master plan was about creating this incredible like pedestrian core. A corridor along the entire site of there's some retail along this place, community space along here. You got parkettes here. You got little hills that are just built up with trees around to have this own little like mini forest feeling that's really just become this really cool spot for pedestrians to travel to, engage with, or live in, and be an exciting place to visit, and adding some tourist elements to the site as well, by having the access of these roads, not just being how we often see cities designed today, being just roads on every single side of a building and not really focusing 100% on the pedestrian. So that's what's really started that. And from there, it became about articulating the buildings, making sure they're spaced out in a way that when you're actually living in them, that you're not super close to another one. You're getting every building having unique views of Hyde Park and of the water, which would be absolutely spectacular, and taking existing pieces of the site that happen today that I'd be interfering with and bring them into the site to become a positive. So one example of that is there's actually a BMX park on the west end of the site. And it's usually pretty muddy and not a lot of people go to there a lot of the times. I've been a few times myself and I think it's a really cool idea to have, but it could be so much better. So by moving that BMX park, and that's where we would actually have Lakeshore Boulevard go towards that space. The BMX park could actually become more centralized and a better part of this master plan. So the idea of that piece was to actually put that on top of what would be public parking. So one element of the site that exists today is there's a lot of public parking on the ground level, on the street level today. And I don't think that's a productive use of space, especially within the city core. And so by taking that parking, putting it underground condos or having dedicated public parking structures, then we can use that land for more valuable things, such as Obviously, extending the park would be one. So I was able to bring that BMX park, put that above what would be community parking for anyone who's traveling to the site, and then have BMX parking that everyone's able to see what's going on. There's a lot of visual interest, but also just the fact that being there, you're actually getting some incredible views, and there's actually better access to the BMX park because it's taking into consideration the existing pedestrian bridge that exists right now going to Roncesvalles, which is the King Queen intersection, super impressive intersection and utilized intersection that a lot of people access the site today. So it's really just taking the existing assets and improving upon it and utilizing them as an asset for this project as well. To give you some stats, I mean, this is we're talking about 30 acres of land is underutilized right now. So we're talking about by shifting the road and how we're accessing this plot of land. We're talking about 30 acres of land is actually usable space. And what that means is we were able to get plus or minus 7,500 new units onto this master plan based on the way it's designed today. And one thing I did want to point out is that this is all city-owned land by how I understand it today. This is unlike a lot of other developments that would often take place that you have a developer who owns a piece of land who decides when it's the right time for them to develop based on labor cost, material costs, how the market's doing for housing, if there's a different demand that's needed. This is completely different from that because this is really just building on a road. So it's really unique because this is where we start getting actually cities that would have full control and full power of how they want to develop a new community within Toronto. So it's really special. And I mean, this is not a master plan where I'm giving to the city saying, hey, build it, make it happen. This is the best it can be. This is really about engaging in a conversation of can we do something better than being what's done today? And here's a vision, an idea. Don't take it for just like that is it. No, there'd be a lot of collaboration to even start a conversation about this and a lot of work and a lot of infrastructure that have to move to make this happen. But it's really unique because the control is really in the city's hands because they own the land and they can choose how they want to parcel this out, how they want to or how much density they want to add to the site and what other amenities and spaces do they want to include. You know, the proposal includes a community center, a strip of a lot of retail. It even suggests maybe there's space for a hotel. What the market demands, I don't know. As a designer, it's more of here's an idea of what could be, and now there'd have to be a lot of collaboration engagement with various parties to actually make this happen. But I want to be clear that this master plan is not just me going like, oh, we got to do this exact thing. This is really, I want to engage in a conversation of how we can really improve our lakeshore, improve city, Toronto is a city, and improve neighborhoods. And here's a blank canvas that we can do something really special on. The other thing I did want to point out is I know there's a lot of questions on the density here on the site. From me, I know a lot of people have been like, you're just like building on top of this park, removing a lot of the park, and just building tons of towers. That's crazy. The reality is that actually we'd be adding this master plan adds to the existing park. There'd be no building on the existing park that's facing the water and the boardwalk, Martin Goodman Trail, and everything that happens today. It's actually adding to that. So the master plan and that, the way we develop these communities, like we can actually add, in this instance, 10, 14, 15 acres of parkland or public space while also adding new homes, which I think is a really good thing for when you develop these communities. And the density part of it really came from what often happens in master planning is using angular planes. So how that works is you pick the spot that you start your angular plane, which is about 45 degree angle, and usually that's based on parks or significant areas or highly pedestrian areas. And you pick that spot on the plan, say that's where I want the angular plane to start. There's a 45 degree angle, and anything built within that height needs to be within that 45 degree angle. So that's how we start looking at how high buildings can be. And the reason for that is because of shadows. And if they're going beyond this angular plane, it means you're really starting to increase the amount of shadows that are happening around the area. So this entire master plan actually took Hyde Park, like the park itself and its boundaries, as the starting point for that angular plane, because I don't think shadows on the Gardiner or the Queensway or the rail corridor are really a concern about shadowing these. It's let's make sure that if this master plan were to be developed, we wouldn't be, adding shadows to a valuable piece of Toronto being Hyde Park. So that's where the angular plane starts. And anything south obviously wouldn't be affected by the sun. So we're only talking about the north part of the site that'd be affected by the sun. But it allows for actually an incredible amount of density, an incredible amount of new homes because of how far away the park is and just the unusable land in between the park and the site, that we can add a ton of density without adding shadows to people's daily lives or any communities around it because of this massive corridor that no other communities, no other people in their homes are really getting affected by the amount of sunlight that would be reduced by adding all this density. So a lot of things came really into factor when it came to designing how we would potentially mass this thing out and make it really work for Torontonians and developers and potentially a city. There's definitely a lot more that would and should be done to make this even remotely anything of a tangible place beyond what it is today. But at least it's a starting point and something that I've been just feeling an itch to just show anyone who's interested what could be done with just some of the land we have in Toronto. Toronto is super dense, but it's really, could be there's room for more homes. There's room for more development. It's just the way we think about it could change. It doesn't have to just be on empty plots of land that developers own over X amount of years. It can be done by just designing in a different way and thinking of land in a different way. So that's really how this all came about. But yeah, I'd love to see if you have any specific thoughts or questions, or if something's really like confusing you, or something doesn't make sense, or like I would love to dig into this.
Yeah, I think it's a great plan. When did you start working on it? I believe you covered that, but I just want to make sure I have that.
Yeah, so this was, I think it was specifically February, maybe it was March of 2023. So this has been weekends, holidays, evenings, just beyond work, just something that, let's make this a hobby. I'm interested in this. I think it's fun. Let's just spend my spare time and create something that's kind of spectacular. And so it's been over a year now that I've been putting this thing together.
And it, you know what? It sounds amazing. So, I mean, is it complete, or is there more work to be done?
I've reached a point where I'm as complete as it can be for now. I found myself in this rut where you can continue to design nonstop. Every single building was designed, and every single town designed buildings. Like, do I really want that material? Do I want those rounded edges? Do I want to display this type of architectural articulation to the city? Is this something that the city would and the public generally would think is interesting? And I want to make this the best it can be. So we're talking about dozens of buildings here that all are being designed in their own unique way. It's not just a copy and paste glass, render that out. This has been me going through every square inch of the entire master plan, trying to make this the most interesting it can possibly be. So it's been really difficult to pause and just say, you know what? Let's kind of get this out there. Let's get some feedback. Let's present this to Toronto as a whole and see what happens. And realizing that nothing is gonna ever be built the way it looks in a master plan. That's often actually not how master plans are designed. They're really to showcase a vision. And then what happens is you parcel out the land, sell those parcels of land, hire a unique architect to build or design a building on each part of piece of land, and the actual outcome is very, very different from a master plan. So I really did have to take a step back, know that it's a vision, that's all it is. It's something that I want to get out there. I could have kept going for another year if I really wanted to, and like show handful of new renderings. So show more detailed plans, specific site plans, try to get more information out there. But I think at this point it's enough to absorb. A lot of people are already like, wow, that's massive. That's like what's actually going on. So I had to really pare it back and be, this is enough for now. Let's move on. Let's show everyone what I've done and have a conversation, see if it goes anywhere. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. So I think it's done for now. It's now just about, is there any hunger to nor drive to make anything come of this?
Have
Maybe yes,
you
maybe no.
spoken to the local city council? I believe it's Gord Burks, Ward 4.
Yes, that's correct. I've sent out a couple messages. I've got a couple responses. So the one thing here is they've looked at this plot of land and are looking for improvements. And so they've done some local collaboration and engagement sessions to see what parts of this site are pain points or positives for locals, which is fair and it's a great start. And so it sounds like there's some planning being done, but I think that's very safe, quiet approach to this, that it's not nearly as dramatic as it could and potentially should be. It's not very bold, and it's safe when it comes down to it. It's a very safe way for this public engagement to happen. And although you can say, yeah, look at the locals here thing, like we should just reduce this intersection size, it shouldn't be so large, or maybe there should be space between the sidewalk and the road that exists where there's no parking. Maybe we need more parking, maybe we need less, like fair. But this can be so much more. If we just do what we think we want, we end up batching out with special things. Where we can just do minor interventions here, or we can actually make a big change, big positive change for the entire community. And honestly, if you're going to a community event to say, like, point out what these positive and negative things are, you're not really thinking, oh, what can this site be? You're thinking, oh, let me do exactly what I've been asked to do, point out the positive and negative. So it's fair that there's been some interaction from Perk's office and with the site. I think that's awesome. I think that this site can be so much more than what's currently being looked at. And I've been told there's plans. I haven't seen any plans of what's next. I've just seen those initial studies and initial engagement activities, and I don't think it's in their plans to do any development for this year purpose of it's scary to make a big change, and it costs money. But at the end of the day, when you're developing and city can parcel out this land, I think this would actually be a net positive in terms of, if we're just strictly talking about money, I think this actually be very useful for the entire city when we're talking about property tax, when we're talking about parceling off land that is unused right now. This could be a big win for the council. So I have engaged. Not much has come out of it. We'll see if anything, builds up in the next weeks, months, years. Who knows?
Well, I mean, one can only hope. We do have a, well, she calls herself a progressive mayor, but I haven't seen anything yet. But it also may be a great idea to reach out not just to Gord Perks, but the city planning office and perhaps maybe all the councillors. Let them have their say. I'd love to know what Ward 3 councillor Amber Morley would say, and also Ward 10 councillor, the deputy mayor Ozma Malik, because those are the two neighboring wards to Ward 4.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. In terms of the mayor, I mean, I did also, I tried this thing on Twitter where, I'll reach out to anyone within the realm of planning or has any sort of power within the city that may or may not have interest here. Obviously, the mayor being one of them. Was not surprised by very little response. I think something of this nature is there's no appetite to respond to just this huge 7,500 master plan that some random guy put together and put on Twitter. But I've been doing my best to get some interaction, some engagement there. I think your suggestions of going to other wards is a great one. I've gone to a couple other, and they've all just pointed me to the perks office. But I think you're right. Let's keep getting the word out there and seeing maybe a bit of traction can come from this.
Absolutely, speaking of other things that the city wants to do, I mean, I've heard things like I live in Ward 1, so Etobicoke North, and they wanted to level Woodbine Center to make a parking lot for the casino, which I think is completely ridiculous. And there's a metro housing building that I grew up in, and I'm not for tearing down buildings, but this building is so huge that if you tore it down, you could build at least five towers in its place. The trick is then to continue to let them be part of community housing instead of them being condos. And I think that's the biggest problem that the city's facing, and it's all over the city. A lot in Ward 4, but all over the city, where we don't build apartment buildings anymore. We're building condos, and they're for sale. And also, one of my other things is th we don't have a universal description, a universal definition for affordable housing, and that part, it's what irritates me. The city wants to go off and do all these plans, renaming Dundas Street and doing all sorts of things when we have 10,000 homeless people on the street. I don't want to hear about Dundas Street. I don't want to hear about anything else. Get these people off the streets. They deserve housing. Housing is a human right. In my books, that's what I think. And
Absolutely.
it's great that we help the refugees that are coming to Canada. That's absolutely amazing. But what about the Toronto homeless people that some have been homeless for 10 or longer years?
Yeah, and I think you brought up a very important point here, especially relating to this master plan about affordable housing. When it comes down to it, you can do so much to promote affordable housing when it comes to privately owned land and developers, and there can be some incentives and some outcomes there. But when you have a plot of land like this, it's 30 acres that's completely city owned. It's no more excuses of like you can do whatever you want on this land because you own it, and you can make whatever you want happen. This is a very rare opportunity to own land that can be developed, and you have the say of what you want to happen. So I think this is a great opportunity. If there's appetite to actually, put words to action.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I also want to mention that I took a look at the pictures you sent me. Those were your mock-ups. You created them?
Everything about this project has been my brainchild, my passion project. So that's talking about the idea. Great. I mean, everyone has ideas, but the entire modeling together the site plans, the drawings, the visualizations, the entire website, the text, the interactive sliders, you name it. Everything has been me really wanting just to see what I as a human can do personally as a designer and pushing this forward, but also seeing how much I can make this plan feel like a vision that people could buy into and be excited about. So yeah, everything there has been something that I've done over the past, as we talked about, like 12, 13, 14 months, whatever it has been now. But yeah, no, I really appreciate that you like those. Those were something else to put together because I've done visualizations in the past, but really putting one for a master plan that gets out there. You might have seen the blog TO post, and I was super stoked to get that out there. So something that's worthy of people looking at and be like, oh, I can understand and see what you're talking about. It's been pretty cool. Really, really like that.
Absolutely. And our listeners know this, but you don't. And that is that I deliver downtown. So I drive downtown every day. And I always take the Lakeshore cutoff, especially with the new construction going on the Gardiner. So this particular P 1.4 kilometer, I drive it every single day, from Ellis to, I think you said, help me out
It's
here.
like The pedestrian bridge is not even an intersection. It's literally where there's this pedestrian bridge that goes to Roncesvalles that crosses over the Gardiner and over the Lakeshore Boulevard. That's
Right.
where I decided to stop because the road starts curving. I mean, this is me just throwing what I think is spatially available. I mean, it's kind of arbitrary, but I thought it made sense. But yeah, that's where it stops, the 1.4 kilometers. So you know the site quite well then, which I want to make sure you're aware. This entire master plan is not suggesting to remove that road at all or even reduce it. It's just relocating it north, just right next to the highway. It means that the intersections are smaller. It just means that as a driver, maybe you're getting a little less sunlight. Yes, you are getting less sunlight. It's maybe a little less pleasant of a drive, but I think the positives definitely outweigh the negatives there. It's not about the city and pedestrian-oriented environments and mixed-use communities need to be really prioritizing the public space and not a massive 100-meter wide boulevard. But I'm glad that you know the space, and that's great.
Yeah, and actually on the way back out of the city, I see the I didn't know what it was called, so I called it a dirt bike place where they ride the dirt bikes. I see that
Yeah.
every day, so I'm very familiar with the location. And I'd love to see it happen.
That's
The
pretty cool. Pretty
problem
cool.
with the city, and it's something that Phil and I have come to notice. Everything moves really slowly. I don't know why. I don't know why there's too much red tape. I'm not sure what it is, but everything moves really, really slowly. So, if anything that I can do on your behalf, whether it's sending an email, making a phone call, I'd love to help you out. I think this is a great plan. I'm pretty sure that if Councillor Perks sat and looked at it, he would agree. He's a very level-headed, very passionate person. He's one of my favorite counselors. So, like I said, anything that Phil or I could do for you, we'd be more than happy to. I can't speak for him, but I'll speak for myself. I really like your presentation, and thank you for coming on here and doing this interview. I really appreciate it. We have a few minutes left. If there's anything left that you want to cover, or you said there was a website, you can tell people the website they can look and judge for themselves.
Yeah, no, Matthew, I really appreciate you having me on and being able to present this to you and your audience. It's been really something I've been looking forward to. So the website is parkshoreto.com. You can also just look up Parkshore Master Plan. You'll probably see the blog TO post and another post, and they have the link just attached to it as well. Just it's on their Parkshore, just link directly to it. And I think it's the best thing for me that can happen is that people actually think this is cool and that we try to move forward to do something about building more homes and making communities the best they can be and utilizing our lakeshore to the best it can be, and not just for roads but for entire communities. So if anything comes out of this that's more than nothing, I think I'm happy and I'm stoked if any of your listeners are just interested and want to push to make something happen. Let's see what we can do. I mean, I have very little resources, connections within the government or developers, not even that they're getting engaged at this point of the project, but anything that's really just getting people to see this and have an opinion, good or bad, at least it's traction, something of getting Toronto's thoughts on different ways to build, different ways to develop cities and communities within the cities. So I think that's all I can hope for now. So
You
Matthew, I
know,
appreciate it.
I'll offer you one last suggestion before we go.
Yeah.
So Phil always calls this person his political grandfather. They think alike and stuff like that. And of course, I'm talking about former mayoral candidate Gil Penalosa. I think that
I
if
don't
you
know.
were, it, it,
Well,
it,
I don't know, Bill,
well,
but
we had him on the show last year.
I'm
I
aware, yeah.
think that if you reached out to him, I think that he could give you some feedback,
Yeah, so
and
Gil is
see what happens from there.
Yeah, so Gil is the founder, I think, of 880 Cities.
Yes.
So I've reached out to them and I've been speaking with one of their media and communications team members. And so it's we'll see if anything happens with that. I spoke with her, I guess, now 2 weeks ago. So we'll see if there's any opportunities within 880 communities. Obviously, I messaged Gil on Twitter, and I mean, his first thing is like, really, we should just like have the park, build it over the top of this entire railway track and roads, and just extend the park onto the to the lake and Humber Bay, which would be like, yeah, that'd be amazing if that was a possibility. Completely agree. That'd be dope. But no, I've been trying to really pair that back to make this project work for various different users, including, there'd have to be probably some profit for the city, profit for developers, but also have the major win for the entire community. So Gil did respond. It was really exciting to actually see him get engaged there. Don't know if he's fully on board with that, this type of thing at this time. We'll see if something comes of it. But full list of everyone I've been trying to reach out to. Obviously, you included, Gil included, 880s included. And so it's starting to get a bit of traction, but we'll see if it continues. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
Well, in any event, I appreciate you coming on and laying it out for us. And I know our listeners are happy as well. And when Phil hears this, he'll be down with that. He's very he's for the environment, maybe more so than I am, but I love it, so he's gonna love it.
Perfect.
And
Not
again,
good.
just thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Matthew, I appreciate you. I appreciate this. I appreciate the opportunity, really. It's been great talking with you, and I really enjoyed being able to talk about my project, my passion for the past year and a bit. So thank you, and thanks to Phil as well.
And we're back. And I hope you guys enjoyed the interview as much as I did, I guess, hosting it. I didn't know if I would like his idea when it was laid out to me, and I gave it a chance, and I actually like it. So, like I said to Brent, I wish him all the luck, and I hope he I hope we can get it done. I hope we can do something. Anyway, for the main event, this is a topical topic that I want to talk about. Say that five times.
No.
Politics in sports or sports in politics? I can't decide which one I'm talking about, but let's delve into it. So
Sports and politics, a match made in heaven.
the mayor of London, by the way, there's an election there right now. He's running for re-election. He made a statement on, I'm not sure when, but I have it here on Twitter. So he says, if I'm re-elected on May the 2nd, I'm determined to go even further and fully cement London's reputation as the undisputed sports, I believe it's capital of the world, which I disagree with because I think that's New York, if I'm being honest. He has plans to bring WrestleMania to London, which has never been done before. We've had the two in Canada, the rest on US soil. He has plans to bring the NBA there. He has plans. He wants to do another bid for the Olympics. He's got plans. And the only thing that I want to say about the wrestling, if you live under a rock or you're a Philip, you may not have heard of this,
I am
but
so, yeah, I was thinking that. You know what? I was immediately thinking, you're saying live me under the rock. And in my head, I was thinking, or if you're me, but hey, you nailed it. Good for you.
this past week was the NFL draft. Very quickly on Wednesday, last Wednesday, there was a AEW show. Tony Khan, who's the owner, the Mark billionaire that I've talked about previously, he got dropped on his head. He shows up because he works for the Jaguars in a legitimate capacity. He shows up at the NFL draft on camera in a fucking neck brace, selling the injury. And then the NFL Network interviews him, and he proceeds to say, and I quote, AEW is like the Pepsi of pro wrestling, and the WWE is the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling. And they cut him off right away. What a Mark billionaire. He's not even angry that he got dropped on his head and he's wearing a neck brace. He's got a smile on his face. He reminded me of a five-year-old in a candy shop. Anyway, sorry, guys. I know you're listening to politics, but that was my wrestling rant.
No, I like that because I'm not entirely in the world. This is all far new to me. In a weird side thing, you know, as you're saying it, like, bring the NBA to, I assume, the idea of being Britain, not necessarily London. Just London.
Well, he's the mayor of London. I don't know if he has the power.
No. You're right. He doesn't have the power beyond London. But say they were... Oh, actually... Oh, my God. This is when we get into the whole, my geography is terrible. Like, there's got to be... There's more prominent cities in Britain than just London. Right? And I just don't know them? Oh, this is where my Doctor Who kicks in. Like, wait, is Cardiff... That's Wales. Oh my God. No, you know what? I don't know what I'm talking about. But the main thing I was thinking of, you know, the idea of expanding, say, the NBA, and if they get any of those kind of those league teams over there, you know there's going to be more than just the one, right? Like, I imagine they'd maybe establish an NHL team, an NBA team maybe. And all I'm thinking is, how exhausting it would be for like the teams to fly across the ocean for those matches.
Exactly. And he's not alone. So the other thing is that, unbeknownst, I know we haven't really even spoke about it, which is crazy, but we have a mayoral by-election going on in Mississauga. And I just want to talk about it because I wanted to highlight a candidate who's actually not a candidate because he withdrew. He withdrew days after he made a statement on CP as part of an article for CP24. His name's Peter McCallion. I believe he's the son of Hurricane Hazel McCallion, the longtime mayor of Mississauga. He made a statement, and I know that you're not a sports guy, but even you have to have an opinion about this. So I don't know word for word what he said, but basically what he said was that if he won the election, he was going to bring an NHL team to Mississauga, and that Mississauga is tired of living in the shadow of Toronto. Your thoughts?
Then I got to say, he picked an unfortunate place to want to get politically involved in. Like, it's hard to kind of deal with this thing on its own because I've made a couple of references to it already today about Toronto being the center of the universe. That's not entirely Toronto's fault. It is, you know, it's the largest city in Canada. It's you know, where the bulk of investment is going to be, where business is going to be. And by simply being in the ring of influence, sorry, Mississauga, you are trapped in our shadow.
Trapped. I don't know if you know this, but as it stands right now, you know, all the owners of all 32 teams would have to vote. And I believe it has to be unanimous. It can't be a majority.
Seriously?
And Toronto is never going to vote yes. And the other team that can block them is Buffalo, because those are the two closest teams, even closer than Ottawa. Ottawa, I guess, would be the third team. But yeah, Buffalo and Toronto could block this, and it could never happen. I mean, it potentially can happen if they wanted it to happen, but I don't believe that it will ever happen. And I don't believe that's the way to win an election. Let's bring it back to politics for a second. Would you consider what he said a grandiose... what's the word I'm looking for? Is it... it's a grandiose pledge, but there's no follow through. Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah. No, you're not. How is he... In the same way of, you know, you're not Toronto, you don't have the economic engine of Toronto. That's not even insulting Mississauga. That's just a reality of the situation. How do you expect to fund, for example, an arena?
Which they don't have, which they would need to have before the NHL would even consider them.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's silly. I think it's completely unserious.
Maybe that's why he withdrew.
Well, and I'll tell you, I quickly Googled Peter McCallion as you had mentioned him. For some reason, it's like I acknowledge how old Hazel McCallion was. I think she was older than 100, right, when she passed away.
I have no idea. I think 102. I don't
Yeah,
know.
I think that sounds right. So it's funny that I look up a picture of her son, and somehow in my brain I'm thinking like mid-40s, 50. Of course he's an older guy than that.
So I just want to quickly run through some of these names. You can comment if you like. I apologize in advance because I'm probably going to fuck up some of these names. You know, when we started this podcast, you know that we fuck up names here. So running for mayor of Mississauga, Ali Zulfikar, Atassi Dia, Brian Crombie. I don't know if that's the son, brother, husband of Bonnie Crombie.
I do know.
Oh, please tell me.
That's the husband.
Oh, that's the husband.
Which
Oh,
I think that's messed up.
that's a conflict of interest, no?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, no. Don't make him the mayor. That's stupid. You guys don't do it.
Well, my question, do we have any idea what Brian Crombie was doing before he entered this race? What did he do for a living? Was he a painter? Was he a fucking
He
advertising
was Bonnie
executive?
Crombie's husband.
Do we know?
Oh, you know what? Oh, okay. You know what? I'm sorry. I quickly looked it up.
He was a painter.
No, they're divorced. They're not currently together. That makes it a lot better for me personally. I still don't think it's great or smart, but
That don't make a lot of
I
sense, Philip. How the fuck, if you can't trust, if you're divorced, obviously whatever happened happened. You can't trust your ex-husband. I sure as hell don't trust my ex-wife. Why the fuck? Obviously, if anyone asks Bonnie Crombie, hey, are you gonna endorse anyone? She's gonna endorse Brian Crombie. So he's good enough to be the mayor of Mississauga, but he ain't good enough to be your husband. That just don't make sense to me.
Well, I am glad that I figured that out because I was so sure that they were still together, and there was like,
Holy
maybe I
shit.
should have.
I said these names wrong. I thought it was until I got to Brian Crombie. I didn't know. It's not Ali Zulfikar. It's Zulfikar Ali, and
Oh,
it's
they're doing
Dia
last name
Atassi.
first?
No, I
Okay.
thought they were doing last name first.
Oh, okay.
So after Brian Crombie, Dipika Damirla. Okay. Stephen Dasko. He's actually sitting city councilor for Mississauga right now. So I'm familiar with him. I think I was going to interview him, but I don't think we could ever agree on a time. And as you know, I was really friggin' busy doing as many interviews as I can. I remember there were some days where I would literally go to my office and I would do like eight interviews back to 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 back after I got home from work. And then I would pass out. And during some of the interviews, I'm like, it wasn't on camera back then, right? It was just audio. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, for some of them, I just did the phone or I turned off the camera, or whatever. It was like, oh, can this shit be over?
I
Can this
can only
shit be over?
imagine. I can only imagine what you thought while you're interviewing me. I mean, positively, because now we have a show together.
No, I liked you from the start. I again, we may not agree politically, but that doesn't mean what am I trying to say? That's not the end all be all, because I can see beyond that. I can see beyond political stripes.
Matthew is contractually obligated to compliment me every episode.
At least twice.
Oh,
Okay, going back to, we have a guy named, or person
named Jamie Dookie. I love that name.
That's a terrible name.
Dookie, D-O-O-K-I-E, like cookie.
No, I didn't. Listen, I didn't mishear
Dookie.
You. That's a terrible name.
Is it Dookie or Dookie, like cookie?
I really hope it's Dookie and not Dookie.
Okay.
Otherwise, I can tell you what that mayoral, that entire term will be. And I got to say, it's not going to be good for Dookie.
Next on the list is Frank Fang.
That is a cool name.
Mr. Fang?
Yeah, hell yeah.
You don't fuck with someone with the last name Fang.
No.
Next up, your boy, Zaya Gong.
Yeah! What the fuck?
So he didn't win Toronto by-election of mayor, although he did pretty good for someone who you never heard and just you saw a sign everywhere. I can only imagine right now in Mississauga, if signs are allowed right now, his signs are plastered all over Mississauga.
And here's the thing.
Maybe he just took his Toronto ones and crossed out Toronto and wrote Mississauga.
I would love that so much. And there's a part of me that thinks because of the fact that Mississauga is smaller and that he's got that, I want to say, name recognition from his, let's call it a meme campaign in Toronto, I think he could win it. Like this, to be clear, this isn't like serious political analysis of all the candidates, because with the exception of Alvin Trejo, who is running for Ontario Liberal leader, like I don't know too much about these guys. But it would be so funny if Gong was mayor of Mississauga. I'm sort of ironically rooting for him.
All right. Going down the list, Winston Harding. Never heard of him.
That's a man who wants to win because he thinks his name sounds cool and he would be, you know, Mayor Harding.
Next, Sarah Iqbal. I-Q-B-A-L. So do you separate it? Do you go I-Q and then bowel? I don't know. Next up, Saeed Jaffrey. Didn't he run also in the Toronto by-election?
It does sound familiar.
His name sounds very familiar.
Is it S-Y-E-D? Oh, Saeed Jaffrey?
S-Y-E-D, last name J-A-F-F-E-R-Y.
Oh, I think I got it right, but oh, you're right. Toronto mayoral candidate, Saeed Jaffrey. Man, well, you're on the ball.
When you can't win in Toronto, you just go to Mississauga. Fuck it. Next, Mohsin Khan. I love his email address. It's his email address is commongood@protonmail.com. next, Mitchell McEachern, I believe is how you pronounce it. Never heard of him. Maybe I should have, but I haven't. Next, Sinisa Mandrapa. I love that. Mandrapa. I hope I'm saying it right.
Sometimes you get the fun ones.
Next, Mike Matulowicz. Okay. Carolyn Parrish. Not a surprise there. She I believe she was or still is a counselor, so she has footing already. People know who she is. David Shaw is next. I interviewed him for mayor of Mississauga. Maybe we can run his interview as a special bonus episode. George Tavares, he's also, I believe, a sitting city councilor. I think. I'm not sure. I remember seeing his name in the 2022 election. I just don't know if he was running for re-election or election. I guess I'll have to check back. Let me see here. Next is Alvin Tedjo. I think it's Teo.
I could be wrong.
You're probably right. And it's his email address, team@teho.ca. So he really went all out. Fuck if he
Well, in
doesn't
fact, I'm looking at the site now. It's a good looking site.
fuck if he doesn't win, he can turn his website into selling shit.
Well, because again, I'm pretty sure he was running for Ontario Liberal leader. I kind of like the cut of his jib, but we'll see.
And last but not least, someone named Nathalie Zion Yiyan. Okay. So again, I'm no expert, but if I had to give you a top three out of this list, I would probably tell you in no particular order, I would probably tell you it's going to come down to Brian Crombie, Stephen Dasko, and Carolyn Parrish.
So you're thinking essentially name recognition of Crombie and the two current councillors?
Correct.
That's fair. So I agree with Crombie. I think the name recognition will carry him.
Oh, and let's not forget the endorsement.
Oh, true. So my two and three, I'll say number two is I really do think Alvin has a shot, and that's just the impression I get from what I've seen of him. And again, running for Ontario Liberal leader, I think he's very well principled from what I saw. Again, when I signed up to be an Ontario Liberal, everyone remember, I signed up to be an Ontario Liberal. I'm official member of the Ontario Liberal
I
Party.
wouldn't say that too
That,
loud.
listen, yeah, that shame will stay with me until the day I die. But I specifically signed up to be an Ontario Liberal to do one thing, which was the vote against Bonnie Crombie, and I failed to do that. So, but yeah, so it's Brian Crombie, Alvin Tejo, and I truly do think the name and meme recognition of Gong is gonna serve him well this time. I'm rooting for Gong.
My question is, where did he set up shop? Because as we know, you have to have a Mississauga address in order to run. Same
Listen,
rules as Toronto.
the man is rich.
That's
He
true.
like he has been accused of fraud and all this other stuff. Like it's the man could be anywhere. He could just rent probably a storefront and be like, that's my house.
Well, he lives in his mansion in Toronto.
That's right, yeah.
Oh my God, man. I'll be interested to see what happens in this upcoming election. I have no idea when it is. I just know that registration's closed. So these are your candidates. There's no adding to them, there's no subtracting. So bear down and pick one, Mississauga. Pick us a good one because they have to work with Olivia Chow and they have to work with Doug Ford, and for now they have to work with Justin Trudeau until we get a real prime minister, until we get a better premier. And I'm not sitting here saying Bonnie Crombie's the answer, and I'm really not saying, let's just talk about that for a second. We have some time. You remember, I was cautious, but I was excited when we announced Merritt Stiles had won the NDP leadership race. I was filled with optimism, like, okay, I know the NDPs generally are not me. Yeah, I disagree with a lot of that shit, but maybe a breath of fresh air because Andrea Horvath stunk the joint out. We got a breath of fresh air in there. Let's see what happens. And now all this shit, and we're not even, we're, I mean, we're what? Less than, actually, we're not, we're 2.5 years, almost 2.5 years from the election.
Oh, I get what
Because
you're
they have
saying.
theirs in the summertime or in the
Yeah.
springtime or
So let's
whatever.
say we're pretty close to 2 years from and 2 years towards.
Right. The whole thing with Sarah Jama, whatever whatever religious or political side you fall on that, you're entitled to fall on that. I'm not going to tell you how to feel. But I will say that the way in which Merritt Styles handled it, it screams inexperience to me. And you know what? Doug Ford was inexperienced when he became the premier because he had only ever been city councilor before. You could argue some of the things that he did were good, and you can definitely make the argument that most of the shit he's done is horrible. However, because of the NDP ideology, I'm sorry, I don't want someone who is inexperienced.
To be clear, he's apologizing to me.
At the helm. Because again, donors, they run the party, or perhaps the whoever sits at the top of the NDP party, not politically. I'm not talking about the leader. I'm talking about the director of the party. Probably could be, is the one calling the shots. And listen, I'm all for everyone getting their rights and everyone being treated the way they want. But I don't want to pay a $20,000 fucking fine for misgendering someone. Well, because but that's part of the NDP ideology, is to make people pay for it. I don't want to pay for it. I don't ever do it. If it happens, if I do it, I don't ever do it with intent. It's always mistaken. And to this day, I don't believe I've done it. If I've done it, it's not been brought to my attention. So obviously it wasn't upsetting. Again, I don't think I've done it. I disagree with the NDP ideology, and I can't help but say that the liberal ideology and the NDP ideology are closer than you think. You probably disagree with me, and now I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let you speak. And tell me I'm full of shit. Go ahead.
Well, listen, first of all, you know I don't believe that about you, so I wouldn't say it. But I think I've said this before with Merritt Styles specifically, and I think I agree with you. I don't see that as a negative, because everyone has to start somewhere. And Merritt is smart. You know, I take issue with I don't know if this is the provincial party or if this is like universal, because the NDP is supposed to be the party of the working class. It's supposed to be clear, supposed to be. But then to run for leader, I think it was like $50,000 you had to pay. And exactly. So there's only established people who could go for that. That is a stupid amount of money. So my bigger issue is that it was an uncontested election. If there was, you know, five candidates and Merritt won by being the best, hell yeah, I would support her for that. But the problem, and it's not her fault, as far as I know. I don't know the inner workings of what happened, you know, other than it was very expensive to run for leader of the Ontario NDP. But she didn't run against anyone. She ran unopposed. She is a leader because she was there. Because she said, you know, everyone, hey, anyone want it? And she's like looking around, waiting to see someone else raise their hand. And she's like, I got it. So I don't think she's necessarily done too much wrong in my mind. Obviously, the Sarah Jama thing is huge. And I do feel like there's many instances where she hasn't quite been very strong as a leader. One of the things that I think this is going to come off as weird. And while you understand, or I hope you understand, that I'm not saying that they shouldn't fight for this stuff. For example, Ontario Place, the Ontario Science Center. These two things are very, very, very important. I agree with the NDP's position on it. The problem is It really does feel like that the provincial party, the provincial NDP, spends a lot of time focused on the issue of Ontario Place and the Ontario Science Centre, which are both very Toronto-centric issues. The province of Ontario is not only the city of Toronto.
I agree.
That's sort of like, again, and that, I feel like I say that out loud, and that feels a bit like a betrayal to my fave Norm. And it's not, because again, it's an important issue that we need to fight for. But I do get the sense that a large part of the NDP caucus in Parliament is just, or Queen's Park, sorry, is very focused on these Toronto issues. And it's like, we want this to be fought for, but you also need to think of the rest of the province.
Yeah, I don't see him interfering in Thunder Bay's municipal election.
Could you imagine? Hey, you guys, slash your counselors, and people are like, we have counselors in Thunder Bay. I think I'm being a dick for no reason.
Oh, man.
I mean, so there's that element. You're right, actually, to point that out. There's, of course, that element of Doug Ford dicking around Toronto specifically.
A lot
And
of
that's.
people, a lot of people are think, a lot of people equate that to him not winning against John Tory when they ran for mayor.
Maybe.
I don't see that because, listen, this is where, again, if he did it not during election, I would totally understand. I would even agree with it because I believe in reducing the size and cost of government. Government already moves too fucking slow. Even Gil Penalosa knows that. They move too slow. There's too many levels. There's too much red tape. Let's cut the size and cost of government, but give the money back to the people and make shit run faster. Why the fuck are we waiting? He said 3 years for fucking a permit. Are you kidding me? That's ridiculous. And even the agreements they do for the TTC, they sign it and then they don't put the shovel in the ground for 3 fucking years. I don't, that boggles my mind.
There's
How.
absolutely a speed issue, if not just, it feels like it could be a countrywide issue, but it's certainly in the city of Toronto. Actually, and we've talked about this, their relentless need of, if there's something that people want, that there's a popular policy, I feel like, and if the city council doesn't want to do it, I feel like the way that they get around the popular want for it is by sending it to committee, send it to study, wait a couple years to get a report back to make a decision on probably a pilot. It is just slow.
I'll give you a perfect example. I used to work for this piece of shit company that I'm not going to talk about. I used to go home on steels. I used to take steels. Now, if you go eastbound on steels from starting at Kipling to Islington, the Islington light at Islington and Steels going east is too short. Now, if I were to make a complaint about that, or if I were to bring that up as a city councilor, what would happen? Exactly. You said it. There'd be a study. I don't need something studied for 6 months, for a year, for 2 years to tell me what I already fucking know. Adjust the timing because you have a lineup of cars that go all the way back to Kipling from Islington because of the light. I'm serious. During rush hour, it's ridiculous. To this day, I still won't go eastbound on Steeles. I'll figure out some other way. I'll go around it. People always, my family always makes fun of me because they say, Matt, you're fucked up. You'll go 5 miles out of your way just because you don't want to sit in traffic. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want
Yeah,
to sit in traffic.
who wants to sit in traffic?
They're like, but you're doing all this extra. I'm like, but my argument is this, but I'm moving. Oh, man. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Phil and I want to thank all our listeners all over the world. You guys know who you are. Big shout outs to our friends in the States. We're still waiting, man. Guys, send us emails. Tell us how fucked up your municipal government is. Even, fuck it. Well, let's talk about the presidential race. Let's talk about state politics.
Ooh.
Phil and we'll try our hand.
That election is coming up.
That's right.
I used to pay attention to American politics. I got into American politics before I got into Canadian politics.
Well, let's do this. Let's leave our audience with a little teaser. Let's say we have a brief discussion, because we do still have to cover the Sunshine List, and I keep putting it off. We are doing it next week. We're going to do the Sunshine List, and we'll have a brief discussion about who we think is going to win the U.S. presidential race. So look forward to that, guys. And I just want to thank you guys. Phil and I want to thank you for listening again. And I hope you like what we're doing. Send us an email, municipalspod@yahoo.com. And we'll see you guys next week with fresh content.
And welcome to another jam-packed edition of The Municipals.
Rising taxes are probably a reality.
I'm a big advocate of change. Not change for change's sake. Change when something isn't working.
I'm sure the NDP wishes that they had a less embarrassing federal partner to work with right now.
Don't vote, can't pitch.
The moment we go to an election is the end of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.